Alright, it's September 1st, 1988, and we have here Ivan Fast. Say your name?
Right.
Say it.
Ivan Fast.
And, where were you born?
Brooklyn, New York.
And what's your permanent address?
Permanent address is 17 First Street, Athens, Ohio, 45701.
And when was your birthday?
February 10th, 1950.
And, what we're doing here is I'm doing this book called Attic, and I took the picture, and that's going to be on one page, along with like 50 other attics, and then this year picture is going to be another page just for you, what you think is important, what's that happened in your life, like your childhood, using addiction, your spiritual path today, some unique things that happened to you, some interesting things, like for the real world. So it should be an interesting book. And let other addicts know that there's hope.
So you want recovery in there?
I want recovery in there, and bizarre using in there. And the important things about your life as you. This is like a document of you. And what it's going to turn out is that it's actually going to be me. And it's all these people in front of that. I see you in their story. So, I've got 90 minutes to talk to you.
I tend to be sarcastic and humorous in my sarcasm.
Even better. We've had a lot of serious people talking to me. So, we need to get a repeat of Ripley.
Yeah. I'll never live that bad. I talk about that a lot in my reviews. That's in my story, I should say.
We're going to edit it, so just don't worry about it.
You'll just take out of it what you want
out of it. Anything that slips out, this is
all free. Okay. I was born in 1950 in Brooklyn, New York. Lived there for the first 6 years of my life. Didn't get into any trouble for the first 10 years. At the age of 10, I got picked up for shoplifting. At the age of 11, I stole my first car. I didn't take my first drug until I was 11 and a half. And what that tells me is that I was addicted long before I ever started putting drugs in my body. I grew up in a family not talking, not trusting, and not feeling. And that was the same way that my father was brought up in his family, my grandfather being an addict dying from an overdose. And my father brought me and my two brothers up the only way that he knew how to, not talking, not trusting, and not feeling. And today, because of my recovery, I know that my son doesn't have to grow up that way. And, but I don't do what my father did. With my son, I do what I would have liked my father to do. At the age of 11 and a half, I asked my father if I could drink some beer. He sat there with a cigarette in one hand and a can of beer in the other and said, "Don't smoke cigarettes, don't drink beer." And I didn't do what he said I didn't do. It progressed rather quickly for me. 15, I started smoking marijuana, drinking alcohol. Didn't do very well. In high school, my parents put me into a private school. I went through three terrible divorces at that time. Both my parents back abusively. I believe I was neglected and physically abused by my father at that time. That had a pretty big impact on me. And I wanted to get back at my parents. I started to care more about my friends. I no longer idolized my father. I didn't look up to him anymore. My friends were important. I started running Belvine. My father called me a faggot. I told him that was a stupid thing to say. He slapped me for calling him stupid. And I just said that I didn't call you stupid. What I said is that you said was stupid. And he was not able to relate to that type of reality. I tried to get back at my parents by hurting myself, by using blatantly, bringing friends over the house, smoking dope, drinking alcohol, and total defiance of all authority. I did fairly well in private school, got a couple of A's and a couple of B's, which was new to me, and my father just said, "Hey, great man, two A's." He said, "What are these two B's?" I got three A's and a B, and I got took another course. And so no matter how hard I tried to please my dad, how hard I tried to meet his expectations, it was never never good enough. And I came to the realization that I wasn't going to be able to please him, that I would have to please myself. I ended up going to Ohio University in Athens, Ohio, graduating from high school in 1967. And a lot of people say, oh, you know, you wanted to become a junkie, you know, from New York. And really, the only drugs I ever did first in New York was marijuana and alcohol. All the others were in the small little town of Athens, Ohio, where I did it, you know, cocaine, my first narcotic, LSD, all the other types of drugs that you can do. But I did do them all. I went to college to basically stay out of the draft and avoid the Vietnam War. Didn't work out. I was sparking out of college, so I dropped that. Went back to New York, hooked up with some friends where we dealt drugs for 9 months. I believe Nixon was in office at the time. It was America, love it or leave it, so we decided we were going to leave. And we sold drugs for 9 months, and we saved up some money for a round trip ticket to Europe. In the 9 months that I sold drugs, I did several things I said I would never do. I said I would never take LSD, and I did. I was getting busted for possession of LSD. I said I'd never eat sleeping pills because they're down in Anaheim. And I got a party one night, and there's little tiny, maybe tall, little yellow sleeping pills going around. There's only little yellow pills, obviously six of them. And I passed out for a day and a half. My parents committed me to a mental institution when I woke up. I got free room, free board, and free Valium, so it was not a big deal. 15 days observation. I also said I swore I would never stick a needle in my arm. First time I ever did, I ended up getting hepatitis. And about 3 months later, spent 2 weeks in the hospital. And during that 9 month period, I was not aware of any problems. I wasn't aware of that until after I came into recovery. I went to Europe. I visited 9 different countries. I was arrested for 7 of them, all drug or alcohol related. Came back to the United States after a year. I've never been to a demonstration. My goal in life was not to fight a party. My goal in life was to get high. Moving to Ohio, using the way I did not hurt my parents 600 miles away. I may hurt them somewhat, but they sort of hurt me most. Traveled around, went to Haight-Ashbury, California, and San Francisco at the end of the Haight-Ashbury days. Kept on going back to Athens, Ohio. Eventually went back there. Stayed for a little bit and decided my problem in life was I didn't have any money. So I moved back to New York and hooked up with one of my friends that I went to Europe with, and we started selling drugs. And I started meeting some pretty influential people in the illicit business, and I started making a lot of money. I also started using a lot. You know, I would take one drug and mix it with another, and then do this one and that one. Use different various combinations. I'd shoot LSD and heroin together, throw up because of the heroin, and then hallucinate on because of the LSD. Didn't enjoy the drug at all, yet I did it more than once. Same thing with Thorazine. I never really considered them to be a high, but yet when there was something else on there, I would take them. I also swore, because I got hepatitis the first time I used a needle, I wouldn't do it again. Of course, 2 years later I was shooting up again. I guess my favorite thing is speedballs, cooking, and heroin together. People said, what's that like? And it's kind of like going to the top of the Empire State Building and jumping off, which I wouldn't recommend to anybody. I ended up selling drugs in Manhattan for about a year and a half, and started getting a little bit paranoid because everybody started to know everybody and started doing all that coke and stuff. And, you know, sitting up at 3 o'clock in the morning and say, I'm not going to do this anymore, I can't stand the way it makes me feel. And then 2 days later, I'd be sitting in the same chair at 3 o'clock in the morning saying the same thing. And I had to get out of there. So I sold my hash connection to my coke connection and moved back to Athens, Ohio. The only money that I had was money that I had just got from that last deal. I had spent all that money kind of easy go. And I opened up a clothing store there. And a year later, I got together with some other friends. We opened up a bar. And after a short period of time, I sold the clothing store to buy more of an interest in the bar. And owned it for 10 years. And in that 10-year period, a lot of physical things happened to me. Emotional stuff At the time, I couldn't relate to it. Today, I can look back on my life and I can see the pain that I caused myself and others. But at the time, my use was so heavy that I didn't really feel anything. I just went through day after day after day, and I thought my problem was I have no willpower. And it was explained to me in recovery that I had a ton of willpower, because I would go out and I'd get beat up and throw up and arrested and spit at and whatever, and fighting with friends. And then I get up the next day and do it again. And the same thing would happen. I get up the next day and do it again. And what that tells me is that I had an incredible amount of willpower. The problem was my will was to use. And I didn't know how to change that. And at the time, I didn't even want to. I knew at the age of 22 I had a drug problem, but I still believed I was enjoying it too much. Situation being that I felt better when I was using than when I wasn't, but I didn't feel the way that drugs used to make me feel when I first started using. And I could see that today, but I wasn't able to see it at the time. I severed a tendon in my right thumb. I can't bend the knuckle on the top portion of my thumb. It does interfere with some of the things I like to do, like bowling and golf, which I was real good at in high school, and of course stopped getting involved in those types of activities when I started using more and more. And basically, the more I used, the worse I felt, and the worse I felt, the more I used. I was picked up twice for DWI, beat it one time. I was convicted of a DWI the second time. At the age of 29, I got married for all the wrong reasons. I thought, if I get married, then it's going to be better. And really, the only thing I did was acquire an excuse to use. They even say, well, why do you use so much drugs? Why do you drink so much? I say, because my wife is on my back. In 1970, 80, I started having seizures from drug overdose. Because of the doctors called it, I flop around the floor like a fish out of water. And get rushed to the hospital, doctor, you're taking drugs. And I was always basically blatantly honest, and at some point I didn't want to do. And doctor said, you've been using drugs? And I said, yeah. And he'd say, what and how much? And I'd say, 300 milligrams is a lot. And he'd say, well, you had a drug overdose. And I couldn't understand how it could be a drug overdose when I was used to using 500 milligrams. I know today that it was what we called a decrease in tolerance, that my body was trying to tell me something that I couldn't handle it anymore. I had my fourth seizure. My wife was 6.5 months pregnant, and in the skirmish and everything of her trying to get help, she went into labor. And that night we gave birth to a 1-pound, 14-ounce baby boy who had a 70% chance that he would die. And of course, that's pretty high chances. And if he didn't die, there'd be a 70% chance I'd see something majorly wrong with him. So I... he was hospitalized for the first 2.5 months of his life in Columbus Children's Hospital. And I go up every Monday and Tuesday and visit him. And after about 5 weeks, I said to myself that if my son lives for me, then I'm going to live for him. And I knew when I meant that it was meant that I was going to have to stop using because I was dying. And my son came home from the hospital in August, and I had been seeing a drug counselor a little bit, wanting to control my use, as always, substituting one drug for another. You know, I am not a heroin addict, I'm doing cocaine, I'm not a cokehead, I'm eating acid, I'm not an acid drink, I'm smoking pot, I'm not a pot, I'm drinking alcohol, I'm not an alcoholic, I'm, shooting heroin. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to stop doing everything. I just wanted to drink alcohol and smoke pot like everybody else. What happened was I smoked 10 times as much and drank 5 times as much as I had been, and all it was a substitution of one drug for another. Coming back from a Frank Zappa concert trip, and my brain's out on mushrooms, and police were outside my bar, and I said, well, I'll just stop and see what's going on. I stepped out of my car, and I got slammed up against the car, 8 plainclothesmen, handcuffed me, stuck a second degree felony in my pocket, aggravated trafficking. And at that point, I went and I'm ready for some treatment. I'm ready to do something about this. And I think that I went to treatment initially for 2 reasons. One, I wanted to see my son grow up, and 2, I wanted to stay out of prison. I really don't believe that the overall thing was I wanted to stop using. But shortly after I got there, I realized that the only way that I was going to change my life was to put down the drugs. And I thought that, what I have here is a drug problem. Of course, 6 months later, being clean and still having major problems in my life, I began to realize that the problem was me, and not the drugs. And I'm still working on that problem today. I don't endorse treatments that are the halfway houses. I don't believe that everybody needs to go. I do believe that I did, and because that's what happened in my life, and that's what in my life, that's what worked for me. Went through 35 days of treatment, and that's where I was introduced to programs of recovery, and got involved in several of the programs. I went to a halfway house in Omaha, Nebraska for 3 months. Didn't want to go, but some influence and talk about denial and stuff like that. I thought I was going to go back and work at my bar, but couldn't do that. So I went to Omaha. I had my second degree felony reduced to a third degree on a technicality. Fought it in the court of law. Had a hung jury that couldn't decide what I was guilty or not. So I ended up copying the plea on a fourth degree felony for aggravated, for drug abuse possession. They went up before the judge. You know, I was owned the bar for 10 years, paid taxes, I had a 6-month-old kid. I went through 4 months of recovery, working door-to-door, selling cookware, volunteering my services as an adolescent treatment center. I figured I'm a shoo-in for probation. The judge gave me 6 months of my hearing in state pen. And unfortunately, after 30 days, he socked me out. And I was put on probation for 5 years. Initially, my recovery was pretty choppy. I went where I had to go and do what I had to do to stay clean just for the day. And really kept myself pretty isolated from a large portion of fellowship of recovery by staying in Athens, Ohio. And I began to reach out a little bit and see a little bit more of what recovery had to offer. And felt that I needed some more. There was a certain amount of confusion in my life. Thanks to some very loving friends who helped to show me the way. I attended several conventions and workshops and dances and got involved and made friends and began to learn about unconditional love. I did some step work in treatment, so I began to understand how the 12 steps works and the relationship to my wife, the life, and actually started beginning to live those steps. But I was going to several different 12-step fellowships, and I had a hard enough time working 12, nevertheless 24, 36. So I chose the one fellowship that I felt most comfortable in. And although I was a little scared, a little reluctant to make any changes because things were working for me, I did believe I needed more. I just wasn't getting enough out of it, and I believe that you need to put 100% into something to get 100% out of something, and being faithful to two fellowships like being faithful to two wives. So I chose the fellowship I felt most comfortable in, and I began to work on just that fellowship. And over a period of just 6 months, I saw an incredible difference in my recovery and began working the steps of that particular fellowship. I got a sponsor in that fellowship, and it made a very big difference for me. I also, shortly around that time, with about 2 years, actually 2.5 or 3 years, we began to get involved in service work in that program, and that also proved to be a very valuable boost to my own personal recovery. And I believe that the 12 steps helped me to be able to live with me, helps me to be able to forgive myself, see myself for who I am, and allow God to make those changes in my life. I learned about the traditions, and they say that the traditions are for the groups, but if the individual members in those groups do not adhere to those traditions, then the group does not adhere to those traditions. And I began to incorporate the traditions in my life as well, and that again boosted my recovery twofold. You know, 24 spiritual principles to recovery, and every single one of them is just support and the other. Today I have just over 6.5 years clean, and it's been a miracle for a very long time that I've been able to maintain that. I look back and say, hey, my recovery, I hear these people tell these stories, and my recovery was easy, and I thank God for that. And it wasn't. I look back, and here I was with 4 months clean and no money, and I just lost my business, and 5 months clean, I was in the state penitentiary. Both my grandfathers have died. In the last 6 years, my dad, I just came back from New York, my dad is in the hospital right now, had a severe heart attack and a few strokes, and may never be the same. there's so many excuses that I could have used to go back out there again, and just none of them were good enough for me. Not anymore. I believe I truly surrendered to the disease and turned it over to the care of a higher power. I'm not a religious person at all. I just wanted to do with faith. I can't deal with eating, not being able to eat ham, bacon, lobster, and all those great kinds of foods. And earlier on in my drug using days, around the age of 17 and 18, I felt like there was something missing in my life because I didn't have that belief system. And I started looking around. I looked back at the Buddha religions, and they really had to drink tea and eat brown rice, and that was didn't cut it. I don't know, maybe we'll talk a little bit about a food addiction here, but I also checked out the Hare Krishnas, and they had this big party in the main green and all this food and stuff. And they didn't have any carrots. There's nothing orange on it right now. I was tripping a lot of the time and looking for them colors. And they said, well, we don't need carrots because Swami Bhasa Banana doesn't need carrots. And I said, you know, just put a bunch of bowl. I couldn't find anything to fill that void in my life, but the drugs were working pretty good, and that's what I went with. And I do believe that the drugs were my higher power for many, many, many years. And when I finally put them down, the void was there again, and I needed to find something in the 12 steps and the fellowship and the traditions, and the loving God and loving fellowship helped me to see what spirituality was all about, opening up and letting God into my life. And today I believe that I can handle anything that comes my way because my higher power wouldn't give me more than I can handle. Also, things happen for a reason, and I don't even know what they are. I don't have to figure everything out like I used to. I don't have to be perfect because I know I'm not as good as anybody else. And through the fellowship and my higher power, I gain patience, which is one thing that addicts do not have. I'm still loving and caring, however, I put myself on a much higher priority. I'm trying to look at myself first as much as possible. I've got a certain amount of tolerance and acceptance in my life today. There are things that my son does with me that even just a few years ago I would not have been able to tolerate. So God has been seeing to it that things happen in my life when they're supposed to happen. And every once in a while, he puts something in my way that makes me stumble because I need to. And that stumbling part of me is reminding me, you know, giving me some humility to remind me where I'm at and where I am and the things that I need to do. I am very strong on service work in the program and attending meetings. My professional life and details of working for treatment center. I do not believe treatment is recovery. Treatment is to help people prepare for recovery. A lot of the people I work with feel that because they work all day in the field, they don't need to, you know, work on their own program. And I believe addicts working in the field is insanity. And that in order for me to maintain and not burn out, in order for me to really truly be able to help people, I've got to work twice as hard on my own personal recovery, which I try and do. I don't maintain as much contact with my sponsor as I should, and I'm in the process of working on a second, fourth step right now, but I've waited too long. I had the guidance that I had doing my step work, and on the sixth and seventh step, I did that in about a half an hour. You know, I said, well, I'm going to move on. I remove all my defective characters, and then I played them into it, and it wasn't that simple, because I wasn't ready to have them remove them all, and the ones that weren't removed back then are plaguing me today. It's much more difficult for me to work with. I have a lot of faith in the program, and I know that you know, through doing what I'm doing, I'm heading in the right direction, and I'm making progress on a daily basis. I'm not well, but I'm better. I owe it all to my recovery program. Looking back on my life, I mean, I feel good enough about myself today where if I don't want to, and I don't need to put drugs in my body. If they had a cure for this disease, I wouldn't take it because it's not necessary. You know, I believe that even normal social users would be better off if they didn't use it all. It's just not necessary. You know, I feel unfortunate for people who have their primary disease of addiction encompasses compulsive overeating. Because you can't be totally absent from foods, and you can do some drugs, and there's no need for it in my life today. Had a couple episodes physically where I needed to be medicated, but I talked about it in the fellowship, and I prayed for it by higher power, and it worked out in a positive way. And I did what I had to do, and I believe I've maintained my cleanliness and spirituality with this fellowship. It's amazing to me how quickly I recovered from a hernia operation with extremely little medication. The doctor was kind of amused with it too, and he said like, it's amazing how fast you recovered. And I said, well, because I'm not taking any drugs to slow me down. My own body produced endorphins to be able to help with the pain, and it wasn't that bad. Actually, I was almost kind of looking forward to getting knocked out for the operation because I thought I would enjoy it, and I didn't. I hated it. I hated the way it felt, and I decided I would rather feel the pain than feel this way. And so I only took a minimal amount of medication for 2 evenings and nothing all day, and then just asking back for that. Those are things that I've learned from coming around and to continue to come around. I'm here this weekend at the Walk Convention in California, and I wasn't going to come. I didn't have couldn't take the time from work, didn't have the money to do it. And a friend of mine said, yeah, I'd really like for you to go. I'll help you out. Paid my plane ticket there. My mom flew out from New York to be with my uncle who lives out here, and they picked us up at the airport, and we had lunch together. So I got my family back today, and I have my life back today. I'm the person, I'm becoming the person that I was originally meant to be. And the second step says that getting to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore sanity. I didn't make any promises about changing this into a different person, but restoring myself back to the person I originally was. And I believe that that's happening. There's just not enough that I can say of my gratitude for the program of recovery. And my life the way it is today, and I know that no matter what, things are going to continue to get better. I have a lot of faith, and I have a lot of hope, and I have a lot of willingness.
Okay.